Good evening and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. My name is Dr. Sir Essa, and join with me in the studio are my fellow colleagues. We have no guests here today. We're just happy to be amongst each other. And we're going to take you guys through a few current topics that are hot in the medical world and in South Africa at large. Today we're going to be discussing a whole lot of things, but first and foremost, if you guys hadn't noticed yet, we've got brand new merchandise. Look at the hoodies. Beautiful, right? Beautiful. this merch, really, if you guys want, we can hook you up with a hoodie ourselves. Or if you're interested in sponsoring us, let us know in the comments. We're always open to sponsors and to do more work with brands that believe in us. So without further ado, let's get down to the crux of what is going on in South Africa right now.
Yeah.
But before we do,
we need as always,
story. Yeah. Trauma story. So who's giving a trauma story? Is it me?
It's you.
Because I was telling them that I have a very interesting case that happened. This one really shook me. I'm not going to lie. Stuff nowadays surely doesn't shake you anymore. You've seen probably everything, right? Yeah. This is the first time I saw this.
But there's still those ones, yeah.
This shook me. It was Sunday night. I was on call. And we get this. It was 9:30. I'll never forget. 9:30. And it's quiet. And I was actually telling a friend of mine, like, yo, it's quiet tonight.
You never say quiet.
And you never. That's like a rule. The Q word, you never say that.
Yeah.
And I made that cardinal mistake.
You're jinxing yourself.
Literally, as I said it, 5 minutes later, in rushes this guy with the Uber driver that brought him and his wife to the hospital. Mm-hmm. She's out, gone. Cold. Wheels are in.
Immediately Wait, who's puts out? Her.
The wife.
The wife.
Okay.
The woman.
Wait. Rushes her onto the bed. I tell him, rush into the resus area, put her on the bed. As soon as she gets on the bed, I'm like, this woman's pregnant. Is she pregnant? He's like, no.
So Uber pregnant. Driver brought her.
Uber driver and husband are both, one's carrying the legs like this.
Yeah.
The other is pushing the wheelchair. They get in, they put her on the bed. I'm like, she looks pregnant. Is she pregnant? He's like, no, I don't know. She's not pregnant.
Hmm.
Clearly this woman is pregnant. Like term pregnancy. Mm. Right?
Like big...
Big belly. She's not a fat woman. She's skinny. We know that sometimes people can not know that they're pregnant and then give birth. This
that
does
happens,
happen.
Yeah.
But
and then give birth.
And then give birth. But in this situation, there is no way in my mind. This is a skinny woman. She's got a big abdomen. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it could be a tumor or something else. Fine.
Yeah,
we start resuscitation. As we're starting the resuscitation, we call the interns. Everybody, you know, we ring the bell. Everybody comes through. We're starting the CPR. We're getting the adrenaline ready. We're getting the bag mask on. And in that moment, I'm like, you know, the rule is under the advanced cardiovascular life support training that if you have a resuscitation with a pregnant woman, you got to decide if you're going to do a perimortem Caesar, which is do the Caesar within 5 minutes, take that baby out, not for the baby's life, but the pregnancy may be causing problems for the mother. And you can potentially, by removing that extra load that the mother has to bear, her heart now has to pump not just to her body, but to the baby.
Yes.
So by taking the baby out, you actually... potentially saving the mother more than the child.
Yeah.
So the point of it is to take the you guys obviously you guys know this, but just so that they can understand, is to take the baby out to save the mother's life.
Mm.
So we realize we only have 5 minutes. So I rush and tell the intern, go and ask him when last he saw her conscious, speaking, moving.
And he says, is taking the baby out in casualty, not in
casualty, not in a theater setting. Yeah.
Just there in the bed.
So 8:55, he says he saw her collapse. He arrived around 9:25 or so.
So about
he
an
says
hour.
In the car, not an hour. Come on,
maths.
8:25. 8:55.
He said it was
9:25. At the
so
door.
So 30 minutes.
30 minutes. But he says that she actually stopped talking and probably stopped breathing, we can assume, and stopped moving at like in the car sometime on the way there. So I'm like, we got to give her a chance. We don't know the timelines. Mm-hmm. Let's call the obstetrician on call. Get them to come down immediately. The intern calls. We're carrying on with the resuscitation. Mind you, she's still out. We've got no pulse back, nothing. Obstetrician arrives at there. I tell the intern, go get a more like clear history of what's going on. She comes immediately with the ultrasound. She phones her consultant, the boss, and says, what should we do? They said, look, the teaching is 5 minutes. But if you find a pulse on that baby,
take it out.
Take it out.
Mm.
They prepared the pack. Everything was ready. We do the scan. Baby's gone. No heartbeat. Mm. Nothing. Nothing moving at all. Mm. Right. No point in taking this. Pull out a dead fetus. That's just like our minds.
But wouldn't that still improve your chances of getting Ross?
Potentially, we were thinking about that, but we were like, also clearly this has been gone for a long time.
She's been.
Then we looked at her heart. Now, normally with resus, I work in the emergency, so you know we have certain protocols that we follow, and inevitably, if you've done a blood. A blood gas, which basically looks at your electrolytes or anything that you can correct. If you can't correct anything and you've been going for quite some time, and you've got to kind of look at the team and say, is there anything else we can change here? Let's do an ultrasound. We look at the heart. If there's no movements in the heart and there's the blood is already clotted in the heart, you can assume that this person's been dead for quite some time. So we do the ultrasound here. We like, give me the probe. I look at the heart. She's gone. I look at everyone. I say, is there anything we can do? Mind you, now we've been going for 15, 20 minutes. So it's now over almost an hour that she's collapsed. We don't know what's happened. We declare her dead. We decide, me and the obstetrician are going to go out and counsel the guy. We sit down with the guy and we're like, okay, tell us what happened. I was making her food. I went to church. You know, she collapsed. I rushed her to hospital. Did you know she was pregnant? Then he's like, no, I didn't. Well, we're telling you, she was pregnant. But this doesn't make sense to us.
Exactly.
How do you not know?
How do you not know?
Saying she was skinny. And I mean, that was the first
thing. Not like super
spotted.
Skinny, but there's no way you don't know.
And it was the first
thing. When we, next to you know, so one of the things you do when you do CPR on a pregnant woman is that you do a technique called lateral uterine displacement. You try and push the uterus with the fetus inside to the side so that it alleviates pressure off your inferior vena cava, which improves blood return to the heart so that your heart can pump. Now, when we did that the first time, I just said, just feel. Immediately, my fellow colleague feels, she's like, I can feel the head here. I can feel the feet here. There's no way nobody knows. Even the obstetrician was like, listen, there's no way that you guys...
Don't know.
Like, there was definitely a baby here kicking. And if the baby was kicking, she surely should have felt it. Somebody knows that this woman was pregnant. So I asked him, how did you not know? Like, tell us what's been the problem. Four years ago, she had their first child after she stopped contraception. During that pregnancy, she developed a condition called preeclampsia, very high blood pressures. She was rushed for an emergency C-section. Since then, she breastfed 2 years. Erratic periods, she was going back and forth to the gynae, didn't know what was wrong. Then he said that over the last year she hasn't had a period, and I was like, you didn't think to test? Oh, we believe in God and we went to spiritual people and they told us it's this, that spirit, something else. But it's still, the story was just not aligning. This did not make sense.
Something is wrong.
Why not do a pregnancy test? There's nothing wrong. Like, no faith tells you don't test. And like, so then we were like, so what's been happening? Was she sick before this? He said, for the last 2 weeks, she's been drinking some, what's the term he used? Some special spices to get her period. And I'm like, okay, where did you get this from? Some traditional whatever.
So it's as if she also doesn't know she's pregnant.
This is what he says. Remember, a dead person can't talk. So we are looking at this man and we're like, what do you mean she had spices? So he's like, no. We were given this thing because she hasn't seen a period in so long. Also, last pregnancy, they said it was a fibroid. So I thought maybe her stomach's getting big because of fibroids. I'm looking at this guy while he's telling the story, by the way. We haven't broken the news to him yet. But in every single consultation I've ever done where I've had to break bad news, never have I ever seen someone in that interim period where you haven't told them, smiling while they're telling you the story. Like... telling me the story. Yeah, we thought like this. Usually that's how his demeanor was. His face was like that. So I'm already like, the story doesn't make sense.
Because usually they're like, tell me, doc, what's going on?
Yeah, they always go like this. Tell me what
you can't take a history.
You can't even talk.
You want to do it, follow the processes, but also the patient is telling you, like, tell us what's happening. Tell us. He didn't ask. So talking back and forth, and we're like trying to quit. Then I asked, wait, were you guys wanting another child? He says, yeah, we did want another child. So I was like, okay, so because in my mind, that was an important question to understand. Did she try and terminate this pregnancy and then something went wrong? When we did the PV, we found there was no blood, so she wasn't
trying to
terminate. So I was like, this doesn't make sense. Then I ask you more questions. We're like, okay, so you say she took these spices, then what happened? Yeah, you know, she was feeling unwell, then, you know, she just tonight she looked better, and then after that, you know, she collapsed. And I brought her in. So the obstetrician jumps in and says, okay, we have some theories as to why she may have collapsed.
Cardiovascular.
Here was the first thing. I didn't even pick it up immediately. The obstetrician later told me, like, this was the first sign of what we then found was highly suspicious. So she was about to say, the first thing we're thinking of is preeclampsia. She had it again. Her blood pressure shot up too high. Stroke. She bled in her brain. She collapsed. She died. Cool. That was our thinking. So she was about to say that first. She said, number one, he then says she poisoned herself. Like, huh? Who was talking about that?
Yeah.
So she then says, no. Preeclampsia explains that whole thing. And then she says, look, it could have been some sort of spice. We don't know if that spice could have been it.
This guy's selling himself out.
And then, as the consultation goes, we eventually get to the point where we're like, listen, this is what's transpired. Unfortunately, your wife was pregnant. The baby is gone. That's the first thing I said. The baby is gone. And unfortunately, your wife is also gone. He just, you know, I've done this hundreds of times. Hundreds and hundreds of working in the emergency unit for like over 4 years now. I've done this thing so many times. I've never seen this reaction. He just got up, sat down, blankly stared for a bit, then squinted his face like he was going to cry, but never cried. And I was like, yo, this is weird.
This is, I mean, so you just weird. Lost a child and
then
a wife.
He says, like, then I'm asking, because he was talking a lot about faith and Christianity and this and that. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's fate. Like, he just accepts that this is God's plan or whatever. But I'm like, nobody, even if you're the most, like, God-fearing person, you don't think like this. You don't just shattered, not, like, you'd be still shattered. Your wife and your child. You left with the child. Exactly. You know? So eventually, you know, we're chatting. You know, this could be God's plan. This is that. He says, yeah, okay, I want to see her. When he got to the bed, me and the guy, and he went with him. When he got to the bed, he barely even opened to look at her face. Knelt down, lifted his hands up and said, thank God. And then we were like, what?
Thank God. I lied.
So immediately after, we gave him a few minutes and then we asked him, like, what do you mean by thank God? And he was like, no, God has a plan and things work out that way.
What?
Yo, it was chilling.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this man like...
I hope cops were called. I hope.
Let me get to that. She must have a post-mortem.
So then let me get to that. Then I say to them, listen, we don't know why she died. And you don't know why. We're going to do a post-mortem. In the conversation before that, he was telling her, the family is so far away. I don't know what to say to them. They said, we want to do a post-mortem. Why you want to do that? So we're like, we need to find out when somebody dies like this in an unnatural way. We need to find out why they died. Does he not then say, okay, I'll allow you to do that then. It's fine. It's okay. But like looking very suspiciously. Immediately, we all gathered there and we said, listen, we're calling the cops. Forensics must come here now.
Yeah.
They must question this man. There's no way this man is innocent. I've never seen someone like after that whole interaction.
After that whole interaction, I felt like,
you know when you're watching those true crime documentaries and they sit with those like serial killers and they're just stoic. I was like, that's the same feeling I got, but I was sitting right next to this guy. And I'm pretty sure either we all had our hypotheses. You guys can tell me what you think, but I think it must have been something so extreme. Like he knew she was pregnant the whole time. Yeah. No way.
No, he knew.
No, but he knew the whole time. And then... he probably found out maybe she cheated, something extreme like that, and poisoned her, killed her, and brought her in.
Look, in terms of the... I've had a 17-year-old girl who's literally, I'm delivering the baby. And she's like, I'm not pregnant. I'm not pregnant. I'm literally delivering the baby. I mean, that does happen. She wasn't obese. She was big, but she wasn't obese, you know. So that does happen. But this one, if you're saying she was small, you guys saw.
And this is a second pregnancy. You know what pregnancy feels like if you've been pregnant before.
Yeah. He's sleeping next to her. Now when you're lying down, you're chowing. At some point, you can't get on top of the woman. Because there's something. Are you saying it's fibroid?
And no, never, never. You don't feel a kick.
But I've also had that. I've had patients who have like full on. You can palpate all limbs nicely. Everything. You can feel everything, and they still tell you, "I never knew I was pregnant."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, so that, let's leave possible. That. Maybe they didn't know she was pregnant, but there's no way that man wasn't involved in her death. Mm.
Yeah, I think it's definitely suspicious.
Suspicious.
Super suspicious.
But I would still think first she had a stroke or PE, pulmonary embolism.
But why does he say? Or she poisoned herself.
Yeah, I think. To me, it sounds like someone who also believes in a lot of superstitions and you know a lot of things.
Look, it could be. So it could genuinely be. But I'm telling you, in all my years, I've never experienced someone behave like that after losing. I've never had a patient that lost their wife and child in one go and behave like that.
I mean, it's. I would have definitely said, you know, we need to get forensics involved here.
So yeah, forensics is involved. I'm following up on that case. I want to know what happened. Yeah. We all want to know what happened because we all like this.
We'll give us an update in another episode.
Yeah, we'll give you an update. But that's my story, just to start off this lovely, cheerful episode that we're about to have.
Yeah, but also Uber drivers are also hectic. Can you imagine the story Uber drivers
Your Uber driver.
Yeah. I want to get an Uber driver.
Can we need an Uber driver.
When you think about Uber drivers, they see everyone.
Everything.
They've dropped off like celebrities at their Sneaky Link's house at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
They've picked up baddies from being shat on
at
5 a.m.
People are having sex in their cars.
People are having sex in their cars.
And apparently that's a thing. Like,
I've heard. Have you ever heard
how proud people are? Like, I don't think we asked in this episode. I think I was just listening to a couple of friends speak. And this one gent is asking this guy, what's the freakiest sort of sex experience you've had or whatever, and this girl's like, it's sex in the car. No, then I just thought to myself, I hope that's not someone's Uber, hey? Because of the stories I hear from Uber drivers.
Uber drivers. If
Uber drivers
them,
will tell you.
Do you know how many times Uber drivers have told me, like, you know, women will throw themselves at you. They're drunk, they're in your car. He's like, there's times where I'm like, I can lose my job here, I can lose my life here. These women will accuse me of sexual harassment or whatever. And he's like, I've got to be so careful because you don't know at 2 a.m. When you're dropping them off at home and they haven't gotten what they wanted at the club.
Exactly.
They're like, there's a man here. And he's Congolese. He can lay it down. But anyway, we're not here to talk about all that.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about some serious issues in the country. First things first, Yaz Plus, the oral contraceptive, was pulled from the shelves because there was an issue. I think there was a mix-up of the pills. And some people are going to find out
next. Is it a mix-up of the pills or like a batching issue? Like there's a certain batch that's
It's a certain batch which was faulty. Mixed up. Mm. Yeah. So they took the placebo pills, so the four or five pills at the end, they made 25 of those, and then they made four or five
of the actual
stuff. Of the actual contraception.
Because most women, well, some women know, but some women don't know that in that pack, you're not taking a pill every day.
Yeah.
There's placebos in there, there's sugar pills in there.
To make you get your period.
To make you get your period. You can't be taking a hormone every single day. Some days you need to skip, but rather take that thing every single day.
Yes.
Some women, like I know even doctors that take it and then they go, I know the placebos, I'll skip that one. Because I don't need it's just a sugar pill.
They don't want to get their period.
No.
No, some patients also do that.
Yeah, so they know like which one is the placebo. The placebo is doing nothing for you. It's just a water sugar pill. So, but you need to have those in the pack to just keep that consistency of taking the pill every day.
To avoid missing.
So basically what happened, 25 of the real pills were not printed, and those 25 were sugar, and the 5 that is normally placebo is the active ingredient.
Yeah.
You know what that did, even though I didn't know that level of detail, I just thought obviously there's maybe a chemical issue. But I started thinking of how many patients would say to you, Doc, I'm on contraceptive. I don't understand how I'm pregnant. And you think, do you guys think, you know, I think it's probably because maybe there was something just like glaring there. Maybe the color, there was 25 white and maybe 5 orange. They knew that the patient would know that these are the sugar pills and these are the actual pills. But if it wasn't and they maintained the same color,
yeah,
they probably wouldn't have said anything. That's yeah. just my thought, they, though. But
they and patients should also know their medication, man, because they are different. They're different in colors. Sometimes they're different in size.
Mm.
So I don't know if did people pick it up or did Yaz pick it up?
I think it's the brand, the company. Yes, they made a recall because they noticed the problem.
All I know is come August, people are going to be surprised.
Again, people are not going to know that
they're pregnant.
I'm not pregnant.
So what happens in a situation like that where you, I mean, you were preventing, the lady was preventing, you guys were preventing.
Yeah.
And there's the thingy fault in the contraceptive. Now the why your wife is pregnant. And there's a child. Do you guys sue now the company for the child?
I think we need a lawyer on here to tell us what the... But I think you could sue and win. Or maybe there's some disclaimers in the medication box. Like, but this, how do you also prove that? This is not effective. Look, you can't prove that it was Yaz's fault.
No, look.
If they could prove like categorically that it was Yaz's fault, and there's no way to prove that. There's absolutely no way and that
Yaz
you can
will
say
or the company is Bayer, I think, that makes Yaz.
They'll say there's a percentage chance that this doesn't work. So for that percentage, you could be falling.
There's a package insert.
So you could be that 1%.
You fell at that 1%.
No, there's a package insert that you have a responsibility to read, which explains that the red ones are this and the yellow ones are like this. Yeah. This size.
Which gets to my point.
And
I think
it's your responsibility
because of the color issue. But
they,
obviously, this is what I think. Because of the color issue that they probably did in all of this, they mentioned.
Mm.
I think if the colors were maintained.
Mm.
The colors were maintained.
Yeah.
They were maintained, yeah.
So how do they know that the 25 were placebo? So
they probably realized later.
The placebo
was
white. Right?
So there's a picture of it there.
So I'm guessing the one on the left... Is the
So the white is the placebo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So then all those other ones in the white were not working, but and then the ones in the
red. But that's exactly what I'm saying. So my point was this: because it was so obvious.
Yeah.
You have to take out a media statement and say, hey, there's a big problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's say the machine coloring sort of was faulty, right? So the colors are good. The colors are exactly the same.
Yeah.
But just do you opposite. Think they would have? I mean, they lose billions.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they would have also contraceptive pills that have all the same color also.
Probably the shares.
I think they would have had to, but I'm just going to give you a solution to this problem. If I was in a situation where my partner was on Yaz, and then there's 25 sugar water pills and 5 active, and I've chowed the night before, I'm telling her, take all 5. They count the same. If you don't have emergency contraception, 5 tablets of Yaz will sort you out. Mm.
But I'm sure there's a specific
actually
5.
Works. Actually, it works. Describe this nicely because I don't want to describe it but describe it.
Why do you want me to describe it? Yeah. I've just given you the information.
Before you even describe
you're
it.
You're a doctor,
so
Brendan.
So I was saying...
You know this from...
I was
from
saying if you take any roll, 5 at a time...
No, so you say, so
no, 5 of the active pills.
You can use it as a morning after.
You can use Yaz as a morning after.
Yeah, but I'm saying, is there a specific 5?
BD.
You take 5. You see, there's 5 active pills there, and there's 25 sugar water. Uh-huh. Take all 5 of those.
Okay.
Guys, there's a guy I worked with when I was an intern. Eh? I won't say his name, but I worked with someone that's our friend when we were interns.
Yeah.
And he had a situation where...
What happened?
Where the girl, so he says that the girl he knew the girl, it was his girlfriend or semi-girlfriend, whatever, and they had sex unprotected because she was like, I'm on contraception. Then the next morning she says, oh no, here's the contraception, I'm going to take it now, it's closed. She's not been taking it, right? And then he says, like, I phoned the doctor that we work with, like a senior, and I was like, I'm in this situation, she has the pills here, am I chowed if she takes it? He was like, yes, you chowed, but tell her to drink 5 now and then drink 5 again in 12 hours' time. And then that works
as an emergency contraception,
you know?
Yeah. And so if you're in a situation, ladies, now you know what to do. If you have
you
your
that,
pack,
yeah.
Yeah, if you have your pack of pills, it's something that you can do and it'll save you a lot of heartbreak in the future.
But guys,
and hospital visits.
With contraception, the only contraception that is 100% safe is abstinence.
Yeah.
It's only,
condom.
Only
abstinence.
No,
condoms are not
100%.
Man. They tear. Yeah. If you don't put them on right, they slip off. Then you slide in. Then there's problems. It's
but
a problem.
I mean, your advice to no contraception... To
abstinence.
To abstinence can't be... So to someone who's saying, I want to have sex in a safe way.
Abstain.
That's the safest thing you can do.
But I think when you're counseling on contraception, you tell them, look, nothing is 100%. That's why you can fall pregnant with, yes, make some mistake.
Mm.
You could make a mistake and drink the wrong one because you didn't read the package insert, you know. And then the Implanon is actually the second most effective. Where the one, the implant, you call it, the next most, and then sterilization. And then,
what about the IUD?
Then the IUD.
After all of that?
Yeah, it's Implanon, then sterilizing, so snipping the tubes, and then the IUD. Those three are like 90, from 98, 99.
Isn't snipping like the last thing you can do? Like end?
I thought sterilization was last number.
Yes.
After that, what more? Now you've tied the tubes. Yes. Where's the eggs?
In terms of effectiveness, you see.
Yes. Remember, it's as good as who's doing it. So you've done a lot as an intern. I done when I was a junior doctor. Yeah,
just,
I don't know if
I've done. You just tie a loop there. You just take a suture and you tie a loop around the fallopian tube.
What if you tied miss and you don't remember?
Yeah, and you don't. So that can happen. It's operator dependent, obviously, based on.
So I'm sure it can, like, untangle, or your suture can dissolve.
So those type of contraceptive misuses is a big problem. Like when you take an injection, you have to take it after your period, right? Or on your day of your period.
Yeah.
Then you have to stay some time where you should not have sex. People will have sex in that time and they'll still fall pregnant. And they'll be like, but I'm on the injection. Even like IUDs and Implanons, they'll leave them for 5 years plus, 10 years and still think it's working. But then you're supposed to be taking them out and put them in.
Yeah, 100%.
They know Ness always has these stories. Just what's your thought on, you know, as contraceptive, especially and, you know, women peeing either preservatives or the drug into our water and...
you want us to talk about
The water issue. Maybe just explain that concept.
So the theory is that, like, women would pee in the water supply. Right, in the water supply, there's only some certain amount of microns that these things filter to, and estrogen is underneath that level of that size that they filter. So estrogen and all these oral contraceptive pills are being technically could be in the water, right? And also, like, I think we can just jump to that.
Wait,
topic
I think
now.
Hold on. Wait, I think you're missing a big step here. People don't understand where their tap water comes from.
Yeah,
when you flush your toilet and your sewage and whatever, it gets filtered.
Everything gets filtered into
a system, gets, you know, they put some chemicals and whatever to purify the water, and then they filter it, and then, as Nassim said, estrogen is still remaining, potentially remain in the water supply. So that's why, as Nass will now tell us,
is there evidence of this?
In America, there is.
In America, yeah.
Okay.
So you think
done
of
studies.
10 million women in Gauteng all on the pill and peeing into the toilet as normal. And our filtration systems at Rand Water or whatever water filtration system you use, your district uses, can't filter that estrogen.
100%.
So it just gets put back
loop
in your
de
tap
loop,
and
loop
you're
de
drinking
loop,
estrogen.
De loop.
And the thing is, like, Gauteng is the best of all the provinces, right, of our water sanitation system, water quality.
But
there's still water sanitation places where the quality, there's like a blue dot report where they monitor these things and they say how good the quality of the water is and how good of quality they're filtering. They say critical condition in some of those places. So you have no idea what else.
I was working with a lady who was married to a guy who works at a water place. You were saying that there are systems that tell them how good their filtration is are not working. So yes, they're filtering, but they actually don't know the effectiveness of their filtration. Right, so
it's like a tick box. Like, oh, I filtered.
I filtered.
What came out after?
I don't know.
No one knows.
Even after they filter, there's also like in the pipes. You don't know what's happening in afterwards. What's happening?
Exactly.
So 100%. There's like the quality of the pipes also matter. If there's rust and corrosion, and there's now heavy metals inside of it, right? And then say you're now showering in all of that stuff, you're gonna get like acne. You're gonna get like even like if there's calcium deposits. Like, you know how there's like our water is actually hard water. right? So there's like calcium and all these different things inside. So you see how like there's like this white stuff on the shower heads and all those things? That's limescale. That's calcium deposits.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's actually a big cause of hair loss. Like people who shower with these hard water, you get that calcium deposits in the scalp, right? So you get like blocking of that hair follicles.
Wait, when you say hard water,
it means it's full of minerals.
It's also soft water.
What's soft water now?
As in hard water is like stuff that has a lot of
like minerals
in it,
like calcium.
But I'm saying, are we all given hard water? Or
yes, but what he's saying is, what's coming through your taps is hard water.
The term is hard water.
If you don't filtrate the water and move more of the,
so you can filtrate it yourself.
NASA has a filter on
the
taps.
Water filter in the shower.
But is that
why you're not balding?
That's why I'm here.
But guys, now what water do we drink now? Now we can't even shower, so we must shower now with bottled water now.
Heavy metals also cause neurotoxic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, remember that study with the fluoride as well?
Yes, with the fluoride.
So there's a study with fluoride. They say that like fluoride in the tap water has been linked to low IQ in children.
Mm.
Especially in developing brains, right? So I mean, why do you put neurotoxic stuff in the water for your teeth, right? That's what they're saying.
Mm.
But like, I would see more patients with fluorosis, which means too much fluoride in the water that causes damaged teeth, right? The dentin is all broken because of too much fluoride. Mm. You never see someone who has like low fluoride. I don't know what you call it, right? Tooth decay,
hypofluorimia, or something.
Yeah, like come on. So you'd rather just do topical, like put it in the toothpaste or something, not in your systemic.
Yeah,
you know,
in your system. No, I get you. And then the ridiculous thing is like the price of bottled water. It's ridiculous.
People can't afford, like the layman
in the street can't afford that bottled water. But one of the things that I wanted to conclude this topic on is, why is having extra estrogen in the water a problem?
Yeah,
you get estrogenized. You become feminized.
So men become feminized. That's what I want people to understand. Yeah. Because obviously, estrogen is the female hormone.
Mm.
Men have a small amount of estrogen that preserves bone density. What else?
It's neuroprotective.
Bone density, osteoporosis,
all that stuff.
Now, you need estrogen.
Now you're increasing that amount of estrogen, and that is when you get feminization. But what would you say, like, it's obviously not that insane, because it's not like millions of South African men are walking around saying, "Ooh, I feel like the thing is
a lot of the water is actually good quality water, right? You don't know which, if you're in that province that is, or that area that's being serviced by the trash water. And also, like, you can see it how in, like, you know, H. pylori, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the thing that gives you gastric ulcers.
Yeah, it's actually a water contamination bacteria.
Oh, they told us it's from kissing. I used to think I need to stop kissing girls. That's why I have
stomach ulcers.
Yeah.
From a lamza.
It's actually waterborne.
It's waterborne. So it's like, it's something that comes in like low economic areas. So those people who don't have good water sanitation in those countries, H. pylori is all over the place.
100%.
Right? So now we're seeing a lot of it actually in South Africa. People, all these patients are on PPIs daily just because of this thing.
And they're quite difficult to treat. I actually had to revisit some of my medical school teachings on peptic ulcer disease, H. pylori.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like Ness has just said, I started noticing how we were seeing a lot of peptic ulcer disease that wasn't being easily treated with your Nexium and your Trastans you had to now put patients on long-term pain meds, long-term, you know, sort of antibiotics. Mm. And yeah. Mm. So,
I mean, speaking of poisons, let's touch on our last topic, which is, you know, poisonous snacks.
The spazas.
In the spaza shops is becoming a huge problem. Now, we know, from my experience, the most common thing that either people accidentally poison themselves with or intentionally poison themselves with to unalive themselves is rat poison.
Mm.
Or otherwise known as organophosphate or halipirimi, which means
where the sun doesn't set.
The sun sets fast. Something like that.
Means the sun doesn't set.
I had a patient last night.
Also, you won't see the sunset. Yeah. I think that's what
every
it means.
Single day,
see
every
sunset.
Single day.
It's called two-step also.
Two-step.
Yes.
You just take two steps.
Out.
Out.
Yeah.
Now, every single day in my ED, we have a patient on a ventilator who's taken,
Galipidemia
or organophosphate. Last night, but you know what the antidote for it is? You guys all know, but for them who don't know, it's atropine. We had to give this woman 192 milligrams of atropine. And she was only at that level was she fine.
Yeah.
That's how much she took. And it's a problem now because somehow or the other, it's clearly it's infiltrating into the food supply at these same spaza shops. Because these spaza shops sell it, but maybe they don't keep it separate. I mean, you know how those things are. Everything is everywhere.
It's a taxi rank everywhere.
Taxi ranks, whatever. And it's very, very easily spread. Because even when we see these patients, if we suspect from the get-go, you put PPE on to protect yourself because it can ooze out of their pores, get into your hands, you rub your face, now you are getting organophosphate. And just for our viewers at home, Naseem, just tell them what they're going to experience if they accidentally ingest halipirime.
Well, you get bradycardia, so your heart rate drops, right?
Yeah.
You get...
But they're not going to feel that. What are they going to feel?
Vomiting, diarrhea,
that's the first.
Dizziness,
the sweating,
right? The sweating,
difficulty breathing.
Yeah. Then difficulty breathing.
Yeah. Lacrimation, salivation.
But
it's
and
muscarinic
the
effect. Eh?
And so nicotinic both.
It's muscarinic and then you get something called nicotinic effects. Yeah. But let's not complicate things. If you have ingested halipirime, what's going to happen is you're going to start... Probably vomiting and diarrhea is going to come first.
Whatever this fluid or anything that can come out of a hole.
Yeah, all the fluid that's in your body is going to come out. And the one that's most dangerous is when it starts filling in your lungs. I'll tell you, I mean, we see these stories about these kids, but I can tell you plenty of stories, even with kids.
Mm. Like, it's more common in parasuicide. Like,
people want to try and kill themselves.
That's what I wanted to... The story in South Africa is that we have... Obviously, these foreign-owned spaza shops in townships.
Yeah.
Which are unregulated.
Which are unregulated. And, you know, there's always a problem of townships being crowded by these foreign spaza shops. Not just foreign. I don't think it's mainly... It's just foreign-owned spaza shops. So they're saying that, you know... I mean, I've heard speculations of it's actually organized poisoning of communities.
I mean, that's a far-fetched thing to think of. I know plenty Pakistanis.
No, I mean, it's loaded.
Murdering your customers is not good for business.
I mean, it doesn't make sense.
What kind of ridiculous thing is that?
I think it just goes back to...
Who they're going to sell to after that?
The fact that they're different. And different people.
Look,
don't know the truth. And I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. We had a case almost six months ago. This mother put rat poison out because there was rats in her yard. The children didn't know what it was. Somehow, they ate that poison. Children ended up at Joburg Gen Emergency Department, and they monitored them for 24 hours because they didn't have any symptoms. They vomited immediately. But they told the mother, these are the things you need to watch out for because this has a long half-life, meaning it can remain in your system for about 48 to 72 hours. That was on Tuesday. On Thursday morning, they go to the clinic. They tell them, listen, 2 days ago they were there at hospital and they ate some poison and now they're feeling their tummy is like funny, they're having diarrhea. You know what the nurse at the primary healthcare clinic did? Just gave them Sorrel and said, go home. We laugh, but this is what ends up happening.
Yeah. That's what happens, guys.
Issues at primary healthcare can have major consequences later. If that nurse just took 2 minutes to just say what poison or what did they say you should watch out for? Organophosphate is the most common thing she would have known. She would have referred immediately back to Joburg Gen. That night, those two children came in, both cardiac arrest.
Oh.
We resuscitated. Girl and boy. Girl died. Boy survived. Sad.
I don't know if this is gonna, if this even reaches a few people who use Aldicarb or Halipirime and these things as rat poison. I mean, they should stop. Rats are very smart. If you read about the whole industry of killing rats or producing rat poison, there's a difficult line because rats are very smart. So if you give them something that kills them off very quickly, they actually learn and say, hey, we don't go to that thing. You go eat that thing. Mm. We see our boy just collapsed and died. And then they stop.
Amaroto.
They start strategizing on how to poison you guys.
Yeah. Leave it there. The children are going to eat.
Exactly. He loves those snacks.
Exactly.
Let's go play around those snacks.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it doesn't help. Even if you give something that kills them slowly, they start realizing, hey, when I eat that thing, I don't feel fine.
I don't feel good. I'm not coming back.
And then my boy who ate with me, he's now halast.
Yeah.
I mean, I survived. You understand? So they're very smart. Good.
And,
so
and also,
don't use these things. It's not helping anyway.
That's the most common one, but you get another type of rat poison. Similar. Ratex has one that's a super warfarin. Super warfarin makes
that's actually the best.
Makes
you
basically bleed easily. So it makes your blood very thin. So technically, these rats bleed to death when they eat this thing.
Yeah.
But if a human ingests it, they also will bleed to death.
Yeah.
And the antidote is you give them vitamin K and whatever, but it still takes so long for the clotting factors to come back to stop the blood from just pouring out of every
other person. But what's nice?
I've seen once somebody who ate that with haloperidol, the plain one.
Sure.
They came in bleeding into their lungs.
Yes.
Bleeding into their, you know, out of every pore of their body. Didn't make it.
So,
but the reality is these things are dangerous. I don't think that the risk versus benefit doesn't make sense to me. My opinion, and you guys tell me what you think, ban this poison, find something
else.
No,
it's banned. Not banned. You can use it in farms and in agriculture, but it's banned for commercial use. And yet you can go to a taxi
rank and buy it. And you'll buy it.
So I don't know.
You know, you can see the thing there.
Now we have a black market over this stuff, which we know people use to kill themselves. I tell you, every single day I'm at work, I've got at least one person who's poisoned themselves at different levels. Either they're on a ventilator or they've gone or they...
And how often do you guys see these mistakes, you know? A child
mistakes do happen.
Yeah. No,
but some people, like in a week, either other people have tried to poison them, or they.
But this buzzer shop thing, I had 12 children brought, but they ate chicken livers from a feeding scheme. So that's why also this, it's not consistent, man. It's buzzer shops now. It's feeding schemes at school. Because I had a full.
Because
but did they have the symptoms? Were they definitely?
No. That's why I was. I actually used it as a teaching moment for the junior doctors to say we're looking for organophosphate here. Maybe they just have abdominal cramps. A few of them vomited a few times. We observe them for 6 hours. And if it's haloperidol or organophosphate, within 6 hours, you are going to get sick. And they were all discharged, you know.
Yeah.
So it's inconsistent. My theory is that I would avoid snacks that are made by gogos on the side with their hands. Because if they're selling haloperidol,
they can touch it.
They can touch
the haloperidol,
and now they're making the poverty snacks. You know, with the same hands that are contaminated. They're in a child, because it takes very little to affect a child. You know,
it's children that really because it takes so little to actually affect them, and can affect you within even 48 to 72 hours. It's definitely something that you don't want your food anywhere near. 100% anywhere near.
But there's also other causes of that. Like, it could be poison, right? Or it could be like food contamination. Like, you got food poisoning, simple food poisoning.
Simple food poisoning. That's and true. They vomit and they have diarrhea.
Acute gastritis.
Bacteria.
From
a bacteria or virus enters your system. You're obviously going to try and get it out. Your body naturally vomits, diarrhea. And that's how your body deals with any pathogen that enters.
The other one is also like the food itself is actually fake stuff. Like, there's a lot of like, they make... like noodles out of like something else or like plastic
and
food.
And preservatives.
And these weird chemicals. Like they make, what is the...
So, I mean, what's our solution then? In closing, what's our solution for this problem?
No, don't eat snacks that are packed with the hand.
Yeah.
Because if it's coming from snacks that are pre-packed...
Those ones that are untied. Those ones that are tied. No,
my issue with that is that, I mean, some of us grew up eating that.
Yeah. And also, it's cheap and it's affordable. Yeah. And that's
exactly.
All you have.
And number two is, as a doctor now, who used to also work in casualty quite a lot, how often did we actually see patients coming in because they had snacks?
Accidentally.
I mean, even the last one I saw, where I have a vivid picture of that guy, it's usually parasuicide. It's someone...
trying to
buys it, you know, they have other mental issues and they're trying to end their lives. It's really rare. I mean, I'm not trying to discredit what's happening.
Yeah. So my theory is, look, I've seen it far too common. Mm. And I do also see accidental.
Mm.
I do see accidental ingestion and whatever. Mm. Now, in this case, my thinking is government needs to look at what can we use as an alternative. We've got a rat. People live with rats.
Mm.
Children get bitten by rats in Alex all the time and come with sepsis and cellulitis and all of that problem. So we don't want to stop that. And then we've got other more worrying problems. And now we've got the bubonic plague on our hands. Rats are
What about just getting cats?
Yeah, maybe just throw a whole lot of cats are full in the neighborhood and see what happens.
What are those cats doing?
They play with those things. They don't kill them.
Those cats are...
So they play with
vicious things. Yeah. You need vicious prey.
Those cats are thin. They're starving themselves.
No one is feeding those cats in the location.
They're on a vegan diet.
So, look, in closing, my theory, ban it, think of something else. You, Nas?
Can't do anything.
I think government regulation of spaza shop is sort of in the correct direction. Even though I feel like the anger, actually, there's subtle xenophobic things also going on there. But I mean, I don't think you can run. You can't control anything without regulation.
100%.
So I mean, if we can maybe get some kind of regulation, spazas being known, so that if and what's being sold in those spazas, you know. Maybe once we start having a system like that, maybe we can start having inspectors,
100%.
You know, start having some kind of evaluation of tuck shops. Yeah. I think we're in the right direction. Yeah.
I would say also regulate where they get their supply from. Because you don't know which country these things are coming from. What if it is an organized thing and some terrorist group is saying that we need to attack black kids?
Now we're going conservative.
And now they're bringing a container.
Conspiracy.
A container full of
Who's
poison
trying to
snacks.
Kill us, South Africans?
Huh?
Who's trying to kill us?
Elitism, people sacrifice and these guys.
Okay. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, next week we'll be discussing
population
all of
control.
Brendan Matthews'
the
conspiracy
the
theories.
Spaza shops.
Population control. But I'm just saying, my point was that we need to regulate where they get. We know where Woolworths and Checkers and 100%. All this get their supply.
100%.
We don't know where these guys are getting their supply of chips and all these snacks.
So,
selling.
This is, in closing, this is what the government has suggested. All spaza shops have 30 days to go and register and with the Department of Health so that they are known.
And the president said.
And the president came out and said, this is becoming a problem. Register. I agree. That's a good start. Let's start there. Let's see what unfolds. Hopefully, we get on top of this problem. Thank you guys for joining us for another episode. Fun hanging with you guys once again. That's me, Dr. Sohail Essa, signing off.
Dr. Brendan Matthews.
Dr. Tlantla Vilagazi.
Dr. Naseem Sharif.
We'll see you next week.